I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, and more importantly, really, the critical thinkers out there. This show is sometimes an exercise in critical thinking. We don't get this in school. We do not see it done in the public square very often. A lot of knee-jerk reactions to things. I give you some things to think about, hopefully, and exercise some critical thinking skills. I've got a lot to get to today, probably too much to get to today, but I wanted to start off with a couple of things here, and I've got my quotes of the day today. It might take me the whole first hour to get through most of these quotes interjected with some things. You give me a few days to search for quotes or run across these things, and I'll end up with 20 of them. Try to space them out between the week. But there is a quote that has been attributed to Wayne Gretzky and his success in the NHL as probably one of the most successful hockey players of all time. And I've talked about it here before. The quote is, "Go to where the puck is going, not to where it has been." Now, this quote is actually attributed largely to Wayne Gretzky saying, I skate to where the puck is going, not to where it's been. But it was actually his father's quote, and it was his advice to Gretzky himself, to Wayne Gretzky. It's what made him a great hockey star. Don't go to where the puck is. Go to where the puck is going. Wayne Gretzky known to not be very fast, not be a very big guy in a sport where speed and size is preferable. But he was a smarter hockey player than other people. He skated to where the puck was going, not to where the puck has been. Now I'm going to tell you why this quote is important for today's show. My Friday show, as I try to parse through what is going on in this country, the insanity that's been unleashed that I'm just watching and just with utter amazement, I've been trying to explain it to myself. And I proposed on Friday that maybe we've been captured by a LARPing society of elites who have just decided to take offices. They've bought their way in somehow, or we're just allowing Joe Biden to play president. He's always wanted to do it. He's obviously completely ill-suited for the job. He's a wildly unimpressive person, and he's got full-on dementia. And so LARPing, the live-action role-playing, is my latest theory, is that somehow people are just assuming offices they have no qualifications for, didn't earn. They just are playing their parts. We've got people in the Pentagon who are just really children who have just decided to use our soldiers the way that I used to use my army men when I was a kid. Should not treat them like human beings or anything. Just throw them all over the globe and see what happens. And the reason that I bring this up is because within hours of my show proposing that we are being subjected to unqualified elites LARPing in their positions, I ran across this tweet from Lauren Boebert. She is the Republican congresswoman, one of the MAGA movement people, and I just found this interesting. And again, this is where I go back to the quote of Wayne Gretzky's father, "Go to where the puck is going, not to where it's been." Within hours of me proposing that we're just being exposed to a bunch of LARPers, Lauren Boebert tweets out, "In Biden's 19 months of cosplaying president, he still hasn't visited the border. Don't let him forget his dereliction of duty." But I just found it interesting. Lauren Boebert is tweeting out that that Biden is just playing president. So I thought, well, yeah, maybe I'm onto something. This is what's happened to us. We've just allowed these people to assume offices that they have no no suitability for whatsoever. We look at some mayors. We look at some governors around the place. We look at our treasury secretary. I mean, it just doesn't matter. Look across the spectrum. These are unimpressive people that have not earned their position through any great intellect or achievements. They just find themselves there. I ran across a meme that said, what if the government was replaced by idiots and we're all on the game show to see how long we tolerate them? Joe Rogan, again, this show is about skating to where the puck is going, not to where it is right now. I'm going to back this up several times. Joe Rogan went on a rant the other day about the double standard of Brittany Griner and the thousands of people here in the U.S. locked up on marijuana charges. And this is something I talked about at some length last week when Lauren, she's the cute blonde conservative commentator, basically sent out a tweet saying, you know, Brittany Griner went to an oppressive government and thinks she can get away with what she can get away with in America. She hates America. I hope she likes that oppressive government. And I think, well, that's interesting because Russia's doing nothing different than what the United States does in locking up millions of people on marijuana charges. We act like Russia's created some great crime against humanity, a crime that we commit dozens of times every single day. So Joe Rogan points that out as well. I was happy to see that. And, you know, maybe my views are more popular than I think, but the reason that I feel like on this show I'm swimming against the tide is because, you know, on conservative radio, the big national people who have gotten such great success and who seem to, air quotes, lead the conservative movement, for whatever that means, you know, the Sean Hannitys, the Mark Levines, the Rudy Giuliani's, Mike Pompeo, some of the heroes of the conservative right, as people follow them and express admiration and support for these people, and I do things that are basically 180 degrees from these so-called conservatives, so I feel like maybe I'm swimming against the tide. But then a listener who provides me with a great deal of material named James, he sent me a video, I think on Friday. Thank you, James. And I may be long gone before people understand that I was skating to where the puck was going, not where it was, like the hosts of most of the WGOP radio stations that people have listened to for the last 30 years. And I guarantee you a lot of the normie conservatives, it may take a while. Actually, I think it is going to take a while, but it may accelerate with what we're about to go through here. But I guarantee you a lot of normie conservatives who have dismissed me and Trump supporters who get upset with me for criticizing Donald Trump, you're going to find yourself understanding that the things I warned about, the ways that I looked at some things, were actually on target. They just weren't mainstream at the time. And thanks to James, he sent me this. This is Steve Bannon speaking to the CPAC audience, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Steve Bannon. Here he goes.
One last thing. The biggest scam they have, the biggest con, is not just the appropriations process and how they fund it. It's the Federal Reserve.
What?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I have spoken endlessly about the Federal Reserve for over 5 years now. And I've apologized for it along the way because I know it's dry and it's boring and it's complicated. And who wants to talk about that? There's nobody sexy. Talk about AOC, Nancy Pelosi. That's who conservative talk about. That's who Mark Levine, that's who Sean Hannity talks about. Why are you talking about the Federal Reserve, that boring old institution? I have told you the Federal Reserve is the Death Star. Everything that you're complaining about on the conservative side of things, and even most of the things that you're complaining about on the liberal side of things, all facilitated by that Death Star, the Federal Reserve. And maybe getting popular to talk about. Again, this is Steve Bannon. This is pretty long, but I'm going to let him talk about it.
One last thing. The biggest scam they have, the biggest con, is not just the appropriations process and how they fund it. It's the Federal Reserve. Okay? Okay?
Yeah, I love that. Woo! There's like two people in the whole audience of the Conservative Political Action Committee audience that understand what the Federal Reserve is, I guess.
0.5% of the citizens of this country own more assets than the bottom 90%. That's all happened over the last 10 years since 2008. Now, we took a monetary base of what, back in the 80s, of what, $800 billion? The balance sheet of the Fed was $880 billion under President Bush, right? Balance sheet of the Fed is $9.5 trillion today. The debt's $30 trillion. We have $100 to $150 trillion of contingent liabilities, all just because we're the prime reserve currency. The greatest export we have is the dollar. But all of that rests on the shoulders of our children and our grandchildren. Those are all due bills that are come due.
Jeez, where have I heard this before?
All we've done is crank up. We've just cranked everything up. That's what they're talking about, these ridiculous, insane bills of trillions of dollars, because the Federal Reserve will print the money. The Federal Reserve, by the way, that's owned not by the American people, a central bank that's owned by 24 prime brokers, being J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. Now, how does that work? And governors that kind of selected, but, you know, 12 years. And the best governor we've had in the Federal Reserve right here in Dallas, Richard Fisher, who told you what was going to happen by going to negative interest rates, told you what was going to happen by printing all this money and having $4, $5, $6 trillion, $7 trillion, $8 trillion, now $9 trillion on the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve.
Now, you didn't need Richard Fisher to tell you that. Libertarians have been talking about it now for 50 years.
It's going to cause, you talk inequality, it's not a $15 minimum wage. That's tip money. We have, I think M2 today is what, $22 or $23 trillion. That's how the administrative state pays for itself. We don't need to audit the Fed. We need to end the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has usurped its power and the power of the American people and our elective representatives. And no, they do not have the consent of the governed. We will not comply. We will not submit. And it must be ended. In close,
listen to this audience. That sounds like something I should be applauding at. What's that? What's the Federal Reserve? What do they do? That's what they're turning to each other, trying to figure out what the hell the Federal Reserve is, because nobody at CPAC's ever talked to them about it before. Because I've told you, Republicans love the Fed. They love the Fed. You can't have a worldwide empire of military conquest that lines the pocket of your Congress critters if you don't have the Fed printing up money for it. The Democrats can't send out their checks to the welfare state if you don't have the Federal Reserve to do it. I just love the fact, is it going to become sexy to talk about the Federal Reserve when you finally realize on the right and the left, black, white, young, old, when you finally realize that this institution has destroyed the middle class and your standard of living, will it finally be okay to talk about the Federal Reserve?
Listen, let me just remind you, from the founding of this nation up to the founding of the Federal Reserve, for those 100 years, Hamilton versus Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, Henry Clay, Teddy Roosevelt, William Jennings Bryan, the whole concept of 19th century is almost entirely the politics of money. It was actively debated what the currency was, who controlled the currency, what was a central bank, who controlled the central bank. After the Federal Reserve was formed, we've lost that. That is going to be one of the, if not the most major issue we have. We have to end the Federal Reserve. We have to turn it back. That central bank is going to be owned by one group. You know who that group is? The American people. The American people. Not a bunch of fat cat prime brokers on Wall Street. Not guys like, not third tier bankers from fifth tier firms like Powell. You're going to have the American people control their own bank and their own currency.
So there you go, Steve Bannon, and he says this will be, if it isn't already, the most important issue for us to all look at. Well, I've been preparing you now for 5 years to understand this institution. If you've been listening to this show, if you've not abandoned me because of my boring talk about that old staid, effete institution, the Federal Reserve, if you haven't already left, I've been spending 5 years educating you for what is the biggest issue facing Americans today. Be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
All right, we're talking a little bit about this radio show today, talking about skating to where the puck is going, not where the puck is. you are trained through political propaganda on both sides to tackle every single issue like a whack-a-mole. Whatever is up today, whatever is the story of today, you focus intrinsically on that story for, what, about 2 weeks. And then there's another story to replace it, to distract you to another thing. Instead of going to the root of these problems, the big issues that really need to be tackled, and then all the small issues go away. See, the great Ron Paul, really who I would probably credit with my awakening, he was a Republican, so I was receptive to his message because I was a Kool-Aid drinking neocon Republican back in the early 2000s. And I started hearing about this congressman from Texas and listening to some of his speeches. And I went, huh, hadn't thought about that. That's weird. That can't be right. And Ron Paul ran, one of the colonels of the Tea Party. He doesn't get any credit for that because the Republicans came in and usurped the Tea Party and got you back in line. But Ron Paul was running back in 2008 on End the Fed. I believe he has a book with that title, End the Fed. I love to have Steve Bannon telling CPAC, and thank you again to James for sending me that clip, because I'll be damned if I'm going to sit around and watch a bunch of CPAC speeches as conservatives come on there to get power about getting you to focus on the issue of today, not looking at the root cause of all of it, and just wanting power for themselves so they can perpetuate these huge, horrible institutions like the Fed. A lot of consternation about the IRS now as they hire 89, 87,000 new people. We'll talk about that. But the Republicans aren't going to do anything about it. They've listened to you grumble about the IRS since I've been an adult. Have they done anything about it? Nope. Oh, yeah, they did. They gave you a 3% tax break. That's so cute. They bribed you with your own money. There have been many people speaking out on these things. Quotes of the day today, Murray Rothbard, he is a libertarian economist, philosopher. He said, the government is the only institution in society with the power to counterfeit, to create new money. So long as it continues to use that power, we will continue to suffer from inflation. No, Mike, it's Bidenflation. It's all Joe Biden. He did this all by himself. Yeah, I got a tweet to that idea from the Republican Party. Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers, said the evils of paper money have no end. Now, he's not talking about cash. He's talking about just using pieces of paper backed by nothing. That's what the Federal Reserve and our federal government do. That's Thomas Paine. The evils of paper money have no end. And I love this. Being libertarian, I'm going to give you a quote here, but being libertarian, this is a Twitter account, sent this out, and the way they titled this was, let me know how Republicans show up to debate this, because they will. Republicans will debate this, but this is Murray Rothbard again. He said, taxation is theft. Purely and simply, even though it is theft on a grand and colossal scale with no acknowledged criminals, which no acknowledged criminals could hope to match. It's a compulsory seizure of the property of the state's inhabitants or subjects. No, Mike. Taxes are what we pay. It's the price we pay for a civilized society. Mike, I'm a taxpayer. I'm a law-abiding taxpayer. That is one of the greatest, is that Stockholm syndrome? Just brainwashing? I'm not sure what it is. You've got conservatives out there who brag about being law-abiding taxpayers. Like, that's your bona fides. I'm a good person because I obey everything they tell me to do, and I give them a quarter of my money every single year. That makes me a good citizen. That's bizarro world. And the conservatives are the more freedom-fighting of the people out there right now. And that's what you come up with. And then there's the great George Carlin. That's all you ever hear about in this country. It's our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. And I want you to say, George Carlin died in 2008. This is long even before this ridiculous culture war where they're trying to separate us on masks, on vaccinations, on monkeypox, on Republican, Democrat, on loving Trump or hating Trump, all of these other divisions. This has always been what they've done. George Carlin died in 2008. He says this also. He said, they try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle class fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the blanking money. And it's exactly right. Most people happy to participate in that separation against your fellow American. Y'all getting screwed by the same people, but you're fighting against it. Libertarian Party tweeted out, I've told you, I'm gonna talk about some of this the new Libertarian Party taken over by the Ron Paul faction is firing on all cylinders here. They tweeted out, we empathize with all the drunken sailors out there being compared to members of Congress. We know you aren't war-hungry, parasitic mass murderers. In case you thought the Libertarian Party isn't on your side in the culture war, just because we want to allow adults the freedom to grow and smoke a plant. And this is the amazing thing, because I got another quote here, too. Well, Mike, you know, you libertarians, you got something. But I've been told, the Republicans tell me you people are a bit of a nut job. Ronald Reagan quote, I believe the very heart and soul of conservatism is libertarianism. That's Ronald Reagan. I believe the very heart and soul of conservatism is libertarianism. And that quote is actually a little bit longer. I'll get the full quote later. Libertarian Party tweeted this out. Social justice is a Marxist lie created to bully and divide the American people. Justice only exists at the individual level. Collectivizing it betrays our entire understanding of liberty and justice itself. Now, in response, see, I always kind of look. I find it interesting to take a look at. I'm talking to conservative radio here. Look, I can pick apart the DNC. It was weird. I went to go look up the DNC's Twitter account. They don't really have a... I don't think the DNC itself even has a Twitter account. Maybe they don't want to be held accountable for putting things into print, you know? They already will change their mind on something to speak. They're such wild hypocrites that from one week to another, they will say opposite things, whatever suits their needs at the time. Maybe they don't want to put it all into print. But I do like kind of juxtaposing what the Libertarian Party is talking about and the Republican Party. And you can tell me if I'm nitpicking a tiny bit here, but I just thought this was interesting. The GOP tweeted this out. As we kick off back to school month, don't forget what Biden and the Democrats did the last time school was in session. Locked down schools, demanded toddlers wear masks despite the documented harms, forced students to eat outdoors, isolated students. Now, that's not untrue. But didn't Tate Reeves and the Republicans do the same thing for well over a year? Didn't Republican governors across the country also lock down schools, demand your children wear those ridiculous, ineffective, diseased-ravaged face coverings? See, because what this illustrates to me is that Republicans only understand freedom when it's under attack by Biden and the left. If Republicans pass the Patriot Act, Republicans can't see it as a blatant attack on Americans' freedoms. Well, with 20 years of hindsight now, I think a lot of conservatives have understood what a train wreck that was. Now, libertarians were standing on the sideline as this thing was going through Congress very quickly, as a matter of fact. It was almost like it was written before 9/11. Huh. That couldn't be possible, huh? Well, they rolled this thing out very quickly to surveil and track and trace the American people. And there were libertarians standing on the sidelines going, I wouldn't support this if I were you, but because George Bush and the Republicans did it, you didn't see it as an attack on freedom. Had Barack Obama done it, conservatives might have been up in arms, because Republicans only stand up for freedom when it's under attack by the other side, not by their side. If a Republican president bans bump stocks for guns, conservatives say, it doesn't really matter. But if Obama or Biden had banned bump stocks, it would have been a huge infringement on our rights. And then another tweet here from the Republican Party. Hashtag Bidenflation. Wiped out wage growth, meaning workers' paychecks are shrinking. Americans are getting poorer under Joe Biden. This is the GOP making sure you only pay attention to the attacks on your standard of living when it comes from the left, not from, as Steve Bannon told you, the Federal Reserve that is used by both political parties. And if you think inflation is a new phenomenon, I do ask you to think about the fact that we used to have a situation in this country where one parent, typically the father, could go out and earn a living as an electrician or a pl- plumber or a school teacher or a bus driver and support a family of four with the mom staying home. No endless credit card debts, no home equity loans, a few weeks of vacation a year, and a really nice, cozy little middle-class lifestyle on one income. That has changed over the past 60, 70 years, hasn't it? And Republicans have certainly had their bite at the apple during that period of time. So that's the Republican Party showing you only fear attacks on your way of life and only fear attacks on your freedom when it comes from the left. And when the conservatives are in control, just don't pay any attention to it. It's all for your own good.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Let me be very clear. The left does the exact same thing the right does. The left pays no attention to attacks on them when it comes from their own party. We're going to talk a little bit about this ridiculous bill that just passed. But, you know, the Democrats spent 4 years talking about Donald Trump was going to be a fascist and a dictator and all these other things. And then they get Joe Biden in, who actually uses, the government uses the media and the tech companies to actually censor and attack people. I mean, the definition of fascism within the Biden administration, but they can't see that. This is what happens when you fall in love with a politician or a political party. You can't see clearly any longer. They've got you so fixated on the other side that you don't understand that the people behind you, they're picking your pockets, man. Both parties. It's amazing to watch because it's so blatant. It is so easy to see. So the Democrats got together and they decided that they're going to pass this little bill. This is really disgusting to think that Kamala Harris has got this level of power.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the bill, as amended, is passed.
Yeah, so there you go. The Democrats are cheering this supposed victory of passing this huge spending bill. It's got a lot of green energy stuff in there. This is a really bizarre thing. It's like everything else. I guess they just have to tell you this is a victory. There's not a Democrat alive, certainly nobody listening to the sound of my voice, if there's any liberals or Democrats listening to me. This is not going to benefit you in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, this new IRS army that they're going to hire is coming for you. Well, they're taxing the rich, Mike. They're making those corporations pay their fair share. The corporations aren't going to pay jack squat. They're going to raise their prices. If they're forced to pay any more in taxes, they'll just pass that along to the consumer. Corporations don't pay taxes. People do. And so I don't know what this great victory is, because between now and the midterms, this supposed, air quotes here in the studio, inflation reduction bill or whatever they called it, is going to do nothing of the sort. It's not going to mitigate inflation. The only thing that's going to mitigate inflation at this time is a horrific recession. Now, you're going to get that good and hard. And so inflation is going to come down to a degree. Here's what's going to happen as far as I see it. Again, my whole show today, the first hour, is about skating to where the puck is going, not to where the puck is right now. A recession is going to befall us. In response to that, probably these Democrats, before election time, will probably shoot out some stimmies. They will do something, either the Democrats themselves through legislative action, the Federal Reserve through cutting interest rates. They will respond to the recession by printing up more money, which will create what? Anyone? More inflation. The average American, you will see absolutely no benefits from this bill or any other bill. You're just along for the ride at this point. The idea of hiring this IRS army, I will tell you right now, I believe that the Republicans are going to take control in the midterms, save any kind of real wholesale election fraud. We know that's a possibility. But certainly with the way things are going right now, there is a very real chance that everybody will be so dissatisfied with the way things are going, they will seek to make another vain attempt at changing parties. And I want to see it. The Democrats are completely out of control, cannot be trusted with governing in any way, shape, or form. I hope that the right takes over the government, although if the Republicans take over the House and the Senate, and if one of their first orders of business is to not either immediately stop or fire all of the new people hired to the IRS, I will be on the Republican Party like white on rice. I will brutalize them. Yes, more than right now. Because what I suspect is happening is that Republicans actually, they like the IRS. Oh, they'll tell you that they're on your side, but they cannot accomplish all they want to accomplish. They can't dole out their political favors without two organizations, the Federal Reserve and the IRS. The Republicans, in order to line the coffers in Washington, D.C., so they can dole these things out as far as favors to Big Pharma or to the military contractors, they have to fill that coffer through a bunch of money. And the only way they can get that money is through the IRS and the Federal Reserve. So they will tell you, it's kind of like the way they campaigned against Obamacare. We're going to get rid of that Obamacare. Swing and a miss. This time, 2 years later, we really are going to get rid of Obamacare. Strike two. We pinky swear, promise you, promise you, promise you, give us just a little bit more power, give us the presidency too, and we will definitely get rid of Obamacare. Strike three, they're out. They never had any intentions of getting rid of Obamacare because they take money from the big health insurers the same way the Democrats do. And so the Republican Party will not go after the IRS. What would be more popular with the American people, and particularly conservatives, than to abolish the IRS? So why don't they do it? Even if you decide you like a fair tax or a flat tax, which I tell you again is not starving government, it's just a kinder, gentler way of being robbed. Instead of sticking a gun in my face, could you just hit me in the back with a stick? I mean, that's basically the difference to me when it comes to taking money out of your income and sending it to Washington, D.C. There is no legitimate way to do that. I don't care, fair tax, flat tax. That sounds like a bunch of slaves trying to decide what their punishment should be. But if the Republican Party does not immediately undo this incredible army of people that they are hiring at the IRS, I tell you what, if you think I've been blistering the Republican Party so far, you ain't seen nothing yet. When I come back, I want to talk. Dennis Prager did a segment. This will kind of tie a bow on this hour. I feel the need to comment sometimes on these national guys. Dennis Prager did a great segment the other day. He made a ton of great points. He just left one out. I feel like I've got the opportunity to kind of flesh out some conservative ideas. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around. All right, I'm going to finish this up real quick. I was listening to Dennis Prager the other day. He's here on WYUB at night, so I'm out a lot. I work a lot, and so sometimes I'm out in the car late at night, and I hear Dennis Prager, and he was talking about something the other day. Prager University has done some great videos. I've watched these things before. I agree with Dennis Prager on a whole lot of things. It's just I believe that most right-wing, so-called, air quotes here in the studio, conservatives, and I'm not challenging his conservative credibility. I don't know what conservatism means anymore. If the mantra of conservatism is I'm a law-abiding taxpayer, and if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. If these are the mantras of conservatism, then there's no bent towards freedom in that. So I don't really quite understand conservatism. But he is one of the leaders, one of the top dogs in conservative radio, and he was talking about this spending bill the Democrats are doing. And he made great points about spending money and raising taxes during a time of inflation. I wouldn't argue really any of the points that he made on there. He was exactly right. This spending bill is a disaster. It will do absolutely nothing but exacerbate inflation. And that's why this won't help the Democrats come midterms. It does absolutely nothing for them. So it's bizarre to consider it some kind of a winning strategy for them. But what Prager said, and like I say, I agree with that. I just want to flesh out ideas a little bit. What he says is, how can you spend this money and raise taxes while people are suffering with inflation? That's almost a direct quote. I was in my car. I really meant to I need to figure out voice memos on my phone or something. I want to get these quotes right, but that's exactly right. But here's what Dennis Prager fails to mention. Here's what the Republican Party fails to mention. It is the prior spending to today that created the inflation that we are suffering from today. We are suffering inflation not because of this ridiculous Green New Deal spending. It will make it worse in the future. But they need to explain to people why you are suffering today. We are suffering inflation today because of huge spending, and this is where conservatives, they don't get around to this point very often. Republicans don't. They don't get around to this stuff. The huge military spending going on for decades now. So my question would be, should I have the great honor of speaking to Dennis Prager? Did he cheer when Donald Trump was shoveling money towards the Pentagon for, air quotes here in the studio, rebuilding the military? Because, see, those $800 trillion budgets for the national security apparatus was not paid for. It was printed. That money was printed. When there's comes to foreign aid, there is no probably bigger fan of the government of Israel than Dennis Prager. I would part company with him on that. I believe all foreign aid should be ended, and I believe the Israeli government is just as bad as every other Western government. It should not be supported by stripping American taxpayers of their cash and sending it halfway around the world. I know that's not popular with conservatives, but I would ask Dennis Prager, we are now up to, I know, a minimum of $3.8 billion a year goes to the state of Israel and all other kinds of foreign aid for supposedly our interests around the world. That money has created the inflation that we're seeing right now. And I could play you a clip. I don't know if I got time. You know, Thomas Massie actually made this point. Thomas Massie being one of the greatest congressmen to ever serve in Congress. And he's from Kentucky, just showing me that we could have somebody like this, but we just don't demand it. We're normies here in Mississippi. Thomas Massie tweeted out, Israel receives $3.8 billion of foreign aid from hardworking American taxpayers every year. That vote was to send them another unbudgeted $1 billion. A majority of my constituents don't think Israel needs more of their money, so I voted for my constituents. Thomas Massie was the lone Republican to vote against increased foreign aid to the state of Israel. I'm just saying. So all of these things are inflationary. What the Republicans do when they pass Medicare Part D, which is the largest entitlement since Johnson, and they did this in the early 2000s, essentially what they did was try to bribe a bunch of old people to start voting for them by saying, hey, you know, you're paying a lot for your drugs. How about the government pays and you just pay a little bit of the cost? You can just get a card and pay, you know, pay $100 a month, and we'll pick up the other $900 of the $1,000 you spend. So they made this huge entitlement that we couldn't afford. So we had to go into debt to afford Medicare Part D, done almost exclusively under Republicans, Republican president, Republican Congress, Republican sponsors of the bill. And I've explained to you that 8 of the 9 co-sponsors of Medicare Part D, the prescription drug plan, sailed off into big pharma jobs the year after that bill was passed. And so it is the spending on things like Medicare Part D, on the empire that the Republicans have cheered for, the rebuilding of the military, all of these big plans. These are expensive things the Republicans do, too. Now, it's not as wackadoodle as the Green New Deal, but it's equally as damaging to our budget, and it created the inflation, too. So I agree with Dennis Prager. This is going to do nothing but hurt the American people. This new Democrat spending bill, Green New Deal nonsense, and raising taxes on corporations, which will ultimately just increase prices further for the average consumer. I don't care if you're the biggest welfare queen in the country sitting on your couch collecting checks. Those checks ain't going to go as far now because inflation is even eating away at people on benefits. But the conservatives seem to leave out the parts of all of the inflationary things that they are responsible for that has led to the inflation of today. And it's almost very illustrating to me exactly when we saw this big pop in inflation. What a lot of people don't understand is when you saw the stock market going up under Donald Trump, do you know what that was? That was inflation. There was all this money sloshing around. Interest rates were so low, people were speculating with money to get a return on it. That was just inflation. It wasn't prosperity. It wasn't successful U.S. corporations making massive profits and just doing great with innovation. No, it was where inflation was. And then housing. Housing was going up gangbusters under Donald Trump. Yeah, you know what that was? That was inflation. Because the Fed was out there buying mortgages. Banks couldn't write mortgages fast enough. Packaging them in these bonds and selling them to the Federal Reserve and mortgage-backed securities. All of these things were inflation. And then the COVID spending, and why I think it's so illustrative of where we are and where I want to take people mentally, is that we had this big pop in spending on COVID where we created all this new money, and about half of it was done under Donald Trump, and Trump cheered for it, was mad at Thomas Massie for forcing a vote on it even. I mean, Trump was ready to send out $2.3 trillion, and then the other half was done under Biden. Hand in hand, the Republicans, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, printed a ton of money and landed us in this soup. I think it's so illustrative of how the two parties work hand in hand to create this mess, yet each of them just point at the other and pretend like they didn't play any part of that. It's just wrong.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I may be a little strident today. I've got a pinched nerve in my back, right on my hip. It's, you know, I got to tell you, people who have succumbed to opioid addiction, any kind of painkiller addiction, they have my absolute sympathies. I know these things are tough to get off of, but if you've ever experienced pain, I can't imagine living with this. To me, this is usually a 2 or 3 day issue. I've got these, as somebody that I really pride myself on being a remarkably healthy guy, not a sick day in 17 years now, not missed work or any social engagements. I've got sniffles and stuff occasionally, but oof, when you get some back pain, I tell you what, I know people who live with it constantly. I just don't know how you do it. I guess maybe you get used to it to some degree, but so if I'm a little extra aggressive today, it's because somebody is constantly jabbing an ice pick into my right hip, and so that's why I'm coming after everybody hardcore today. Wanted to do a little bit of economic news. As I explained to you, that this show is attempting to skate where the puck is going, not where the puck is, with libertarian ideas, rather than the conservative whack-a-mole of constantly only pointing out the problems on the other side of the aisle. I've got some interesting economic news. One thing that's a little sad, I saw, credit card debt in this country is soaring. We're going to talk a little bit about the recession, and I ran across, you got to hear this, I got a clip here of Brian Stelter at CNN talking to Paul Krugman. He is the Keynesian economist, the Nobel-winning, Nobel laureate economist that has gotten everything wrong for his entire career, yet he is still the expert the New York Times and CNN goes to. Very interesting exchange between the two of them we'll get to in just a second. Credit card debt is soaring. I played a clip last week about England. Their energy prices over there, I believe, have already gone up. I can't remember the exact amount. It's a big, hefty increase. They said there is another 77% increase coming November 1. They have price caps over there. And then in January, they will have another 50% increase in energy prices over in England. A lot of this is inflation. A lot of it is Green New Deal stuff because the air quotes here in the studio, conservative Boris Johnson was a Build Back Better guy. Like, I still don't understand how conservatives supported Boris Johnson. He's one of the biggest globalists I've ever seen. So it's partly because of the Green New Deal, but it's also because England is embarked on this entire Russia-phobia stuff and cutting them off the world energy markets. The British have finally had it. The British are acting more American revolutionarily. Is that a good descriptor? Than the American people are. In Britain right now, with the announcement of these new increases, the resistance is growing as more than 75,000 irritated people in the UK have pledged not to pay their electricity bill this fall when prices jump. 75,000 people have pledged a strike on October 1st. If the government and energy companies refuse to act, then ordinary people will. Together we can enforce a fair price and affordable energy for all. tweeted, "Don't pay UK," an anonymous group spearheading the effort to have more than 1 million Brits boycott paying their power bills by October 1st. Now, the idea is they can't cut us all off. We'll see, I guess. And there's a lot of people who take those kinds of pledges. We know those things around here. We see these things too. If they ever do X, Y, or Z, I'm not okay with that. And then they do X, Y, or Z, and everybody lays down like a well-behaved puppy. But we'll see the British, I mean, they are getting prison pounded by energy cost, and it is strictly because of their government's policies. Just across the board. This is not some shortage of energy, some shortage of oil and gas. No, it is Green New Deal garbage and cutting Russia off of providing oil and gas to Europe. So the politicians, it's a pretty straight line to the politicians for energy problems in Great Britain. Now, Great Britain did not show a whole lot of fortitude when it came to COVID restrictions. They were really cowed and bullied and did whatever they were told. But I guess if you mess with their power bills, then they're going to fight back. So they're starting that in England. You're about to see your taxes rise. I have told you. It is far past time. Actually, I've asked. I mean, I've asked the question. I've never had anybody call because I ask questions that I know nobody's thought of before. I've asked the question, what could it possibly be that you would draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not sending any more money to Washington, D.C. if they do this? I mean, they are currently using taxpayer money to experiment on our children with an untested genetic therapy, and taxpayers are funding it. I mean, if that's not the red line, I'm not really sure one exists. And apparently there doesn't seem to be one that exists. Everybody will do what they're told because I'm a law-abiding taxpayer. That's how I identify as what people say, particularly on the right. All right, I wanted to get to this stuff. This is Brian Stelter. He's CNN, just absolutely horrific, twisted, left noodle boy on CNN. And he wanted to talk about, you know, we came out last week, found out we had two quarters of negative growth. The discussion became, are we in a recession or not? All of the Biden administration officials, who some of them just weeks ago said two quarters of negative growth was a recession. Now they say, oh, no, that doesn't, what are you talking about? We've never heard that before. So Brian Stelter at CNN is there to carry on Democrat talking points along with Paul Krugman. Listen to how he teases this segment with Krugman.
Corrupt news, a lesson.
So there's Carrie Lake, but you see other candidates as well in other states. Oh, there's running for re-election doing the same. Oliver, do you see a difference? Liz was saying that this has been going on for a long time.
I think the viciousness has certainly...
I can't believe I've somehow have flubbed the starting point of that. Maybe I missed it by a minute. Let's try this here.
Stupid, so how should we cover it wisely? Okay. Lost Liz, we'll try to get her back next time. Are you tired of hearing talking heads speculate about the economy? Us too. So we booked a real expert instead. Paul Krugman is up next. Plus, a single tweet that set off a right-wing ruckus. We're going to get into the lesson in directing media coverage toward what actually matters.
Yeah, so they're going to get a real expert, Paul Krugman, on. A real expert. He's going to give his bona fides here in just a second. He's a Nobel laureate. basically, CNN's, are you tired of listening to people tell you we're in a recession? Don't believe your lying eyes. Don't believe how your life has been affected by inflation and the fact you're, I mean, it's not a recession when the average American has 4.5 jobs at this point to keep their head above water. They consider that a good job market. So anyway, here it goes.
It's the economy, stupid. So how should we cover it wisely? We've all seen the headlines. They're impossible to miss. The economy is slowing, declining, shrinking. And the phrase of the week is recession fears. It's what you see in every banner, recession fears. Economists seem to be struggling to explain this weird economy, maybe the weirdest economy we ever lived through. People want to know, is this a recession or not? The White House is arguing about the definition of the term. The media is basically caught up in that debate as well. There's a lot of confusion about it. So let me bring in a guest that I've wanted to interview for a long time.
There's a lot of confusion about it because what they've attempted to do is take the technical definition of a recession that has been enforced since, I believe, 1955, and they've decided that, we're just changing. This tends to create a great deal of confusion. So, yes, it's not confusion on exactly where we are economically. And I'll tell you, too, I'm going to say this again. I've said it before. And, boy, I'm out there with this one. You're not going to hear this many other places. But if you understand how GDP is calculated, let's just say you've got 5% growth in the economy on a gross basis. You know, total economic activity grows by 5%. Well, then they subtract out the inflation rate. So if the inflation, if the growth rate is 5% and the announced reported inflation rate is 6%, then you've got 5, your growth, minus the inflation of 6 gives you a negative 0.1, right? Well, I believe that the government understates inflation by about half all the time. They lie to you about inflation. I would submit to you that we have been in and out of a recession for much of the past 15 years. Understand, when you see a GDP, and this happened some under Trump too, sorry, but it did. When you see a GDP of like 0.8% growth, technically that's growth. That's positive growth, right? But if the way that they got to that was that we had 4% growth and they're announcing a, we'll say 3% growth, but they say it's a 2.2% inflation rate. So you take the 3, you subtract the 2.2, you get 0.8 growth. If that 2.2 inflation rate was actually 5%, we know they understate inflation all the time. If you had, you know, if you had 4% growth, 3% growth in my example here, but inflation was 5, we were in a negative 2. They just don't report this because they always understate inflation. I believe one of the problems we're seeing with our society and how more and more people are falling out of the middle class is because we have been in and out and in and out and in and out of a recession for the past 15, maybe 20 years if I went back and looked further. And they've just manipulated the inflation rate to make sure they didn't report on that. And this is during all administrations. I'm just saying.
Time. Paul Krugman. He is, of course, the Nobel laureate and economist, a distinguished professor at the City University of New York's Graduate Center, and a longtime columnist for the New York Times. Welcome to the.
He's a longtime columnist of the New York Times. Never got a thing right. Never been right about anything, but he parrots government talking points, particularly left-wing government talking points. He's a Keynesian. He's all about money printing and government spending being good for the economy, so the New York Times keeps him on the payroll. God, he's as right as Anthony Fauci. All these guys who have been in their positions for decades and decades, if you actually examine their record, they're never right. They're just never right.
Program, thank you for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can we dispense with the recession debate real quick? Are we in a recession, and does the term matter?
No, we aren't, and no, it doesn't. I mean,
there we go. I mean, Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist, the Nobel laureate in economics. Just no, we're not, and no, it doesn't even matter.
One sentence. That was it, huh?
No, that's what all Brian Stelter wanted to hear. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you for telling, you know, all these CNN viewers, are they not paying attention to their lives? Man, things are kind of tough. Inflation is everywhere. I'm having to work 3 jobs to keep my head above water. I got a bunch of friends that have gotten laid off. Man, it is tough out here. I was thinking we were in a recession. I was thinking the economy was not doing great, but I tuned into CNN and they told me it was doing great. So
yeah, that was it. It's none of the usual criteria that real experts use says that we're.
Did you like that? None of the criteria that real experts use. Now, I got to tell you, it's got to be across the right and the left, the young and the old, the black, the white, the Hispanic. You please tell me you've lost your face in the faith in the expert class. Have we ever seen 2 or 3 years now of the, air quotes here in the studio, experts? I'm using that term a lot today, aren't I? The air quotes in the studio, the experts. Have you ever seen the experts ever be so catastrophically wrong? Wrong about inflation, wrong about it being transitory, wrong about recession, wrong about masks, wrong about lockdowns, wrong about COVID, wrong about genetic therapies. I mean, is there any, can we just go ahead and do away, stop listening to this class of experts? And as Paul Krugman says, you know, the real experts, if you listen to the real experts, they'll tell you this isn't a recession.
That was it, huh?
Yeah, that was it. It's none of the usual criteria that real experts use says that we're in a recession right now. And what does matter? What, you know, the state of the economy is what it is. Jobs are abundant, although maybe the job market is weakening. Inflation is high, though maybe inflation is coming down. What does it matter whether you use the R word or not?
Certainly the white.
What does it matter if you address the reality of the situation the same way that we have since 1955? I've talked about it before. I'd like to go back and try to find some translated versions of state Russian state media, Soviet state media, back during the 70s and 80s when the Soviet Union was at its apex, soon to make its descent into collapse. And you know that they had to be very desperate to keep this illusion. Oh, everything's fine here in the Soviet Union. nothing to see here. We're killing it. We're killing it over here. It's just fantastic, you know. And then the next thing you know, the entire system collapses, right? So during the last, what do they call that in Astoria? The denouement, right before the big reveal happens. The last few years of the Soviet Union, I would imagine, were very similar to our mainstream media right now. Oh, no, everything's fine. Don't look around. Don't trust your friends. Whatever you do, don't read the internet. Don't make up your own mind. Let us tell you, everything is just going great. This is American Pravda, is what this is. CNN carrying water for the Biden administration. There was a big blockbuster jobs report on Friday. And I actually, the jobs report from the previous month, I had a suspicion the day I reported on it. And within hours of my suspicion, it was confirmed by people that had gone through and looked at the jobs report and explained why the jobs report for, we just did July, must have been June, was a positive report. Well, this July report was an even more positive report. I smelled a rat again, and there it was. We'll talk about this latest jobs report when we come back. Stick around.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
All right, I've told you this is going to be a big economics show. Steve Bannon talked to CPAC about the Federal Reserve, so maybe talking about the Fed will become sexy. I've been beating down that door for 5 years. Maybe my time has come. Economics is another thing. If people properly understood economics, we would actually demand of, if you want to vote Republican, that's absolutely fine. I get it. I understand. There's only two parties. They've gamed the system so bad. There's only two parties. And the Republican Party is not as nutso as the Democratic Party is. That's fine. Wouldn't it be great if instead of just spending that hour a year of going and getting in your car and going and pushing the button, you actually sought out during primaries people who actually understood economics and could deliver us from this this beast of the Federal Reserve and endless taxation and spending? You actually pick the right candidates for the Republican Party. More Thomas Massey's, less of the establishment types, that kind of thing. So that would be great. But anyway, the jobs report came out last month. And it had this big positive number to it, and I reported on it because I come on at 9 o'clock. Those numbers are usually released around 7:30 in the morning on a Friday. And I remember coming in and going, that can't believe that's really the case. That seems weird. And I said, well, I guess that's what happens when people are having to pick up second and third jobs. You get a lot of hiring when people can't keep their head above water with just one job. They need several jobs. And it turns out within hours of that, people who parsed through the numbers came out and said exactly that same thing. The same phenomenon has gone on with this latest jobs report. Reported on it on Friday, 528,000 jobs were announced. This sent the White House out bragging about creating all of these jobs. Well, it happened again. In an interesting twist, you can tell me how this actually happens. And again, I'm going to get into some kind of economic stuff. Maybe if you've listened for long enough, you understand these things. I'm not trying to be condescending, but these just are not things that are talked about in mainstream media or in political speak when people rally behind their parties. But there's a statistic called the labor force participation rate, meaning how many people, what percentage of the working age population actually has jobs. Now, we have this big stellar jobs report of 528,000 people hired. The Biden administration went out and took a victory lap on this big number. They say we can't be in recession if all these jobs are being created. But the labor force participation rate, meaning the number of people who actually have jobs of the working age population in the United States, somehow that shrank. Huh. How does that happen? How do you create 528,000 new jobs but have fewer people actually working? Well, that can be explained very easily if you realize, well, a lot of people got laid off. The number of corporations announcing layoffs does not seem to be reported much, but if you look at chart of that, it's looking pretty ugly. A lot of big major corporations have announced layoffs. I believe Amazon is laying off 100,000 people. Walmart has laid off a bunch of its C-suite people, a lot of the corporate guys. It might have been 1,000 of them. I can't remember the exact figure. Don't quote me on that. But it was a lot of folks. A lot of corporations are announcing job layoffs. So how does the labor force participation rate go down if we've created 528,000 new jobs for people who are just getting that first job? Those two things can't happen at the same time. Something happened back in March, too. There's two ways they survey the jobs market. One is the establishment survey. This is the 528,000 new jobs created. This is the headline number that CNBC will tell you about. And then there's another survey called the household survey. Doesn't get a whole lot of play. The household survey and the establishment numbers seem to coincide pretty closely all the way up into March of this year. And then the household survey started showing decline in job holders, while the headline number just kept going up. Right now, there is a 1.8 million, million job differential between the two. And again, they typically track pretty close to each other. Understand, the establishment survey, I believe, goes out and surveys employers, and then they do their little magic on it with seasonal adjustments and all these other little algorithmic things that they do to these things to give you some bogus number that they can really manipulate in any way they want. The household survey actually gets on the phone and calls a bunch of people and says, hey, what's going on in the household there? How many of you are in there of working age? How many of you got jobs? Any of you gotten laid off? Any of you picked up a new job? They actually go out and call people in their homes. The household survey has shown declines in the labor force since March, while the establishment number, the manipulated number, is showing this increase. Since March, the establishment survey shows a gain of 1.68 million jobs, while the household survey shows an employment loss of 168,000 jobs. So these things are not usually in stark contrast to each other, but they are now. But according to the BLS, the U.S. labor force saw a 71,000 drop in full-time workers, offset by a 384,000 gain in far lower paying part-timers. The offset, multiple job holders are people who have more than one job. Increase for June, 92,000. 92,000 people that have picked up their second, third, fourth, fifth. How many jobs can you have? It's going to be like how many licks to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll lollipop. Pretty soon we're going to be fine. How many? You'll start seeing stories. How to juggle four or five jobs. They'll probably run this story on USA Today. Hey, we figured it out. This is how you can have five jobs and still have a quality of life. Drink plenty of water. I'm sure they'll probably tell you. How can you, how do you get the slaves to do more work? Oh, the USA Today will probably have a segment on it. It'll be the new thing. How many jobs you got? It used to be you met somebody and you said, hey, what do you do for a living? That was kind of, it's either the weather or what do you do? Small talk. I'm not great at small talk myself, but those are a couple of the go-tos. Dang, it's hot. And what do you do for a living? Pretty soon it will be, how many jobs do you have? And what I believe will ultimately happen if they continue with this propaganda campaign and the way they manipulate us is it'll be a badge of honor. I've got five jobs. How many do you have? Man, I just have three. Well, you better get to work. You're not as I've got five jobs. People will start bragging about it. It'll be the new status symbol. And I hate to say it, that sounds like something the conservatives will come up with. We work hard for our living. We're not going to pay attention to the causes of inflation. We're not going to talk about the Federal Reserve. But we are going to pick up five jobs because I feed my family. Yeah, but in the 1970s, couldn't a plumber working his just one 9-to-5 job have fed a family of four and taken vacations with no debt? Well, yeah, that was back in the 70s, but now I've got five jobs. And I pay my taxes. Good God Almighty. What will we not put up with? I got to go. I'll be right back.
never know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I think I'm on to something there. I really believe. You just watch. This is maybe another prescient call by the Mike Madison Show here. Conservatives are going to embrace having multiple jobs. They are going to find this as a badge of courage to have multiple jobs and to pay taxes out of every one of those jobs. This will somehow be the way you poke the welfare queen in the eye, that you have sacrificed your entire free time instead of, as I say, we could actually tackle the source of inflation. The problem is you'd have to hold your own party accountable on both sides. I mean, this is Republicans and Democrats. But Democrats, you know, they'll complain about having five different jobs. They'll say, oh, this is all stacked against us. And they'll blame the Republicans and rich white guys. Republicans will embrace four or five jobs. That'll be the thing. Are you a good American? Are you pulling your weight? Have you got at least three plus jobs? I've got five jobs and I pay my taxes. I'm telling you, just watch. Just watch. If they can convince us to all line up for a genetic therapy, an experimental gene therapy, they're going to convince you that having multiple jobs is the American way. It's going to be the new thing. Look at this great house I've got. I've got five jobs. That's how I feed my family. I mean, I don't ever see them. I can't remember the last time I went to anything in my kids' school, but I've got those five jobs, and I pay my taxes every time. Are you familiar with the pop singer Shakira? She is, I believe she's Spanish. I'm not sure. Yeah, she must be Spanish because of the story, that the news about her recently. She's a cutie now. Shakira is a QT. I've always thought she was a very cute woman. She does a lot of hip dancing. Very, very cute, very, very sexy woman. Then I found out that she's in trouble with the Spanish government for stiffing them on something like $9 million in taxes. They're threatening to put her in jail. Boy, I thought Shakira was sexy before. Now that I realize she had tried to keep $9 million of her dollars from being stolen by the Spanish government, the woman's never been sexier to me, ever. And this is funny to me because it sounds like I'm scolding conservatives. I think I am to a degree because I believe you've been brainwashed. I'm a law-abiding taxpayer. That all that says is I obey whatever I'm told to do and I allow them to take whatever they want. This is in direct opposition to what I hear most conservatives say. I am for small, limited government. Get out of my way. Well, you really can't have it both ways. If you obey and then fund the government as it grows and grows and grows under Republicans and Democrats, I don't know how you're really a freedom fighter. I'm just saying. I remember, I think this was kind of during my awakening, or even maybe before. Maybe I was still a Kool-Aid drinking neocon Republican back in the 1990s, whenever Wesley Snipes got in trouble for not paying taxes. And I remember listening to Republicans and conservatives really go after Wesley Snipes. And what they would say was, I pay my taxes. He needs to pay his too. They need to get him. And I think this might have been during the 90s. Because I think I was still, you know, this is when I still had uncomfortable thoughts as a Kool-Aid drinking Republican, and I heard other Republicans bashing Wesley Snipes, and I was thinking, I thought we were against the government taking stuff from us. Why is everybody cheering for the government to go after this guy who just tried to keep money he earned? He didn't steal the money. He went out and got roles and had a good agent, whatever he did. He went out and made movies, and they paid him a lot of money for the movies. And I heard conservatives and Republicans cheering for putting this guy on a cross and crucifying him because he dared not offer up to the state what the state had demanded. And I remember, you know, I guess I was a conflicted Republican from the start. I was looking around and just going, aren't we against the government taking a bunch of stuff from the people? Isn't that what the founding fathers were against? Wasn't that kind of the kernel of what started this whole experiment of the United States? Was an overarching government picking the pockets of the colonists, and they said, no, not here. We're going to do something a little different here. But you'll still see, I mean, I'm not going to put a dent in it. You're still going to see conservatives and Republicans say, oh, yeah, they did. I pay my taxes. I let them abuse me. He needs to let them abuse him. I don't know. It's just obviously very, very odd stuff. I've got a little bit of COVID stuff to get into. I found a public service announcement from 2021. I don't know if it's good or bad for my health that I read comment sections under stories. I do that because I don't do a caller-generated show here. I try to come up with, every day, great work, great effort on my part to try to find stories and flesh out stories that are not going to be covered on every conservative radio show. I find other things interesting and mostly more important. And so I spend a lot of time going stories. I take a copious amount of notes and I bring clips to this. I cultivate a show here and I want to get through that material. So I haven't been really caller based. And sometimes I don't like that. I'd like to know what people think. You know, I apologize. I know sometimes people call when I'm in the middle of a segment and I don't take the call. And I apologize. It's no disrespect to you. It's just I want to get this stuff out there because nobody else is talking about it. I've only got may seem like a lot of time, but I've only got a brief period during the day. You've got 22 more hours to hear everything else. So I try to get my stuff out there. But I do read comment sections because I'm always interested. What will usually I'm on a conservative website or something more libertarian like a Zero Hedge. Of course, Zero Hedge used to be more libertarian. It is now more kind of Trump supporter stuff. But I read through the comments and usually they make me dumber. And so it gets a little aggravating. But Zero Hedge has probably the best comment section of anything. There's a lot of thinking guys on Zero Hedge because it was largely a financial website. People on Zero Hedge at least understand the Federal Reserve, so they're a little bit of fellow travelers to me. But I read comments on Breitbart or Gateway Pundit or anything. I read comments because I'm just curious to what people come to. Usually on conservative websites, I read the comments and I go, oh my God, my work here is not done. Because there's a lot of hypocrisy and what I believe is Stockholm Syndrome in these comment sections. But I do oftentimes find some great clips. People will put stuff down there, so it keeps me going back. I ran across a PSA from February of 2021. Wait till you get a load of this thing. They were starting with the propaganda very, very early into the genetic therapy experiment. Very interesting PSA that rolled out right on time. When did we start doing the experimental gene therapies on people, the untested experimental gene therapies? We started that in, I think, December of 2020. Is that right? Boy, that seems fast, doesn't it? So it was March that we actually started freaking out about this ridiculous disease by December. Oh, that's right. We had Operation Warp Speed. Who was behind that again? Oh, never mind. I'll be right back. I'm telling you, during the course of a weekend, I come up with a ton of stuff. I pretty much have a Monday show by Friday at about 4 o'clock. I'm ready to go for a Monday, but then the world keeps happening during the course of a weekend, and I just stack news stories on top of each other. I'm more incredulous on each one that I see, so I run across stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on with these shots. There is a heartbreaking series of tweets out there of a father. He's in Canada. I think he threw a couple of aboots in there and clued me into that he was Canadian. And he calls, he's got a child, a 7-year-old child, that his wife, against his wishes, took in to get the COVID jab. When this father called the pharmacist who had injected his child is now in the hospital with myocarditis. The wife went against his wills, but the wife asked, you know, are there any side effects to the shot? And apparently the pharmacist just goes, well, it could be a sore arm. That's it. They inoculated this poor man's child and the woman, too. Look, you know, I can be angry at the mom, but fear drives a whole lot of stuff. I mean, fear makes people do stupid things. We are an entire society of like these teenage movies where they get scared about something and so they run down into the basement. You know, you know, you're watching the movie and you're like, oh my God, what are you doing? I think there's commercials about that. Go get out there in the running car and drive away. No, they run into the basement and get into a closet down there. You know what I'm talking about. Fear makes you do really stupid things. We've got an entire society that's been driven by fear to do incredibly stupid things. This woman who took her child against the wishes of the father to the drugstore, to the pharmacist to get this inoculation, she's a victim. And she's probably feeling a lot like a villain. Can you even imagine? It's bad enough if you're a parent, if the two parents are on board, oh yeah, we got to get our kid this shot. You know, they've been so cowed by fear and they still, for some reason, cling to trust of the air quotes here in the studio experts. It's got to be bad enough when you're both on the same page and you do something that causes your child to possibly lose their life or have their entire future altered. Gave birth. I mean, it's, you know, it's such a miracle when you give birth to a healthy child and you see them develop and they're hitting all their milestones and you just think, oh, we are so lucky. And then to know that you willingly took them into an office and got something injected into their arm that derailed their entire life, can you even imagine the guilt? Now, a lot of people deal with this guilt by just saying, oh, that wasn't the shot. My kid was probably going to have myocarditis anyway. I mean, it's amazing the leaps people will go to mentally so they don't have to admit to themselves that they have done something really horrible. But if you've got a spouse that disagree about this and the wife is so cowed by fear from her, from the Canadian government, from that parasite, Justin Trudeau, and the health authorities in Canada, she has been so terrorized by them that she thinks she's got to go save her baby. My husband won't do what needs to be done. I'm going to take him in and I'm going to get him the shot. And the next thing you know, this kid is in the hospital. He went into the ICU, I believe, for a period of time for acute myocarditis. And they've told him, hey, you know, most people with myocarditis will die within 5 years. Actually, I think it's not both. I think it's 20% of people with myocarditis die within 20 years. I mean, this man is just incensed. And he calls the pharmacist. He says, what is wrong with you people? Are you not seeing this? Can you not tell your patients what is going on? Can you not see this? It is absolutely heartbreaking stuff. And this man's anguish is coming, and he devolves in the end. He's calling this pharmacist names, I mean, horrible names. And you just think, what? Imagine the frustration of just seeing this perfectly healthy child you've got is suddenly their entire future is in danger. And this pharmacist, you know what the pharmacist said? She said, well, we don't tell them about the possibility of myocarditis because it might scare them too much to get the shot. He goes, what? You do what? I can't play the clip because there's some cussing in it. He said, you don't tell people the truth because you're scared they won't get the shot that actually causes this problem? It's really unbelievable what we're seeing. And at this point with all of the news, is there a single doctor out there listening to the show? I mean, I'm hard on the medical establishment here. I would not blame any doctor for long ago having left this show. But, you know, I was a financial advisor. You can make a lot of money as a financial advisor. And I watch what a lot of financial advisors do. Just like doctors, there's some great financial advisors out there. But there's a lot of bad ones, too, that would sell these high commission products that were not helping their clients earn money. It was helping the financial advisor earn money. If you've got a financial advisor, find out what their commission schedule is on every product they sell you. You might be surprised. And so I was a financial advisor. I could have made several hundred thousand dollars a year in this. I couldn't do it. And so when I look at doctors, I go, I know you're trying to protect your livelihood, but to what end? Just the paycheck? Ultimately, I had to leave. I wrote a book. It's on Amazon called Beware of Your Financial Advisor. I was just so disgusted with it. Is there a doctor out there still right now that is pushing these shots for these kids after all everything that we know? And I'm going to do more on it. But I wanted to get this in here real quick. As I said, I found this in the comment section. This is a public service announcement. Looks like it is from the CDC, and the date on this thing is February 24th of 2021. Now, I'd never seen a public service announcement like this from the CDC prior to that, so the timing is interesting.
If you think dangerous blood clots can't happen to you, think again. Up to 900,000 men, women, and children are affected by blood clots each year, and about 100,000 die from them. Blood clots don't discriminate. You or a loved one could be at risk right now. The good news is blood clots can be prevented. Knowing the risks and symptoms are key. Major risks for blood clots include a family or personal history of blood clots, a recent hospitalization or surgery, pregnancy and cancer and its treatments. Symptoms of a blood clot in the legs or arms can
include... Boy, they listed a lot of things that could contribute to blood clots there. They seem to have left one off.
Include pain, swelling, and skin that is warm to the touch, red or discolored. Symptoms of blood clots in the lungs include difficulty breathing, chest pain that worsens with a deep breath, or a cough, coughing up blood, and a faster than normal or irregular heartbeat. Speak with a doctor about your risk for blood clots and seek medical attention if you have any symptoms. On average, one person in the United States dies of a blood clot every 6 minutes. Don't let that be you or someone you know. Stop the clot. Spread the word. Learn more at stoptheclot.org/spread the word.
I'm just saying, it's interesting. February of 2021, suddenly there's a public service announcement. The CDC decided themselves, we need to get out ahead of this blood clot issue. Let everybody know right now that you're always at danger of a blood clot. What did they just say? Every 6 minutes, somebody dies of a blood clot. So if one of your loved one dies of a blood clot, we told you, they just happen all the time. Yeah, the timing of this public service announcement, a tad coincidental. I am a coincidence theorist here on the radio show. I just thought that was interesting. That's all the time I got for today. Appreciate you joining me. I will see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.